We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, now we welcome in none other than Jeffrey Jordan. Is it still Jeffrey or is it Jeff? Like, what are we going with here? I want to make sure I get it right.
I mean, most people call me Jeff. I have no preference, but Jeff works. All good.
All right, people. The only person who calls me Jeffrey is my mother when she's really, really pissed off at me.
So. Yeah, likewise.
We'll stick with Jeff.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys. For sure.
No. Thanks for coming on. I mean, you and Rob have history here. For people that don't know, you have history. 2005, 2006, Nike camp teammates. I don't know who got more shots. My guess is neither one of you got a lot because Ty Lawson had the ball in his hands and Ty did not love to pass back then. Did he, Jeff?
That's very, very true. I remember a lot of coast-to-coast layups, you know, getting rebounds and taking it distance. Wasn't a lot of passing. Wasn't too many assists going around, but you know, it was a fun time. I think
Rob pass? Everybody had fun. Hey, did Robbie pass?
I never had the ball on that team.
I think I was the only one who passed to Robbie, and every time I passed to him, I wanted him. It had to go up. So
get one up, right?
You got to get one up for sure. But it was a lot of fun.
Our team, Jeff, and my mom. I'll send you the photo. My mom, she had to go through some stuff from my high school, and she's kept every photo. Wow. That's ever been taken basketball wise, of course.
Wow.
And she came across a picture from our team at the 05 Nike camp. And John Shire, I mean, could really score. Yeah. Ty Lawson had 50 points in one of our games. Yeah. Sean Sims was he could score at Michigan, but in high school, he was really chucking them up.
He's a monster,
and the worst was Curtis Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly was jacking.
For sure.
I'm pretty convinced that you and I might have taken a combined like three shots. Maybe.
I agree. If it was three shots, we would have been lucky. I don't know if we got that many up. But yeah, we were stacked. Everybody was you know, just playing, you know, just out there hustling, you know, competitive spirit was there. Just a super talented group of people.
That was also the year at Nike camp, though, that D Rose was there and Durant was there. So like the talent, usually ABCD and ABCD was still really good that year, but Nike camp had some real players. Do you remember, you probably don't remember this, but we were playing at NIFS, which was the center over on the campus, IUPUI, nice gym. They had I think they had like one of the RCA Dome Final Four courts and the Market Square Arena courts. They had two courts down. And we were leaving out the back stairwell and I was walking out next to you or behind you. And in the back stairwell, there was this like two-story poster of your dad.
Yeah.
We're walking out and I'm like looking at this and I grew up in Valparaiso, Indiana. The Bulls are my favorite team. Your dad is my favorite player of all time. And I'm looking at this and I'm looking at you and I'm like, this is this guy's fucking dad. Like, how crazy is this? It was unbelievable.
It was wild, man. And, you know, I think it was hard for me to recognize what you guys, how you guys looked at me, right? Because I was just part of the guys. Like, everybody treated me as you know, I was supposed to be there and having a good time just trying to do their best, right? So you know, I think from time to time, you know, I talked to a few people. I remember Curtis Kelly, you know, definitely had a bunch of questions for me throughout that time. And there was just a bunch of guys I feel like that I had already known prior to that too, like Jared Bayless and obviously D Rose and those guys. So, and Shire. So it was just kind of like, you know, it didn't stun me that much, but I definitely got some questions and some looks and stares. It was a lot of fun though.
All right. So tell me what you're doing now. Like, what have you been up to? How old? I mean, you and Homo the same age? Are you guys both, what, 35-ish?
30. I'll be 34. Yeah, I'll be 34 in November.
I'm aging you. You know, Homo played like 8 years in college. So I tell everybody he's 40 already, and people believe it, Jeff.
Yeah, that's the best part. Spreading these bullshit rumors about me out here.
Hey, I'm right there with you. It feels like we've been playing for about 20 years. But
you've aged a lot better than Homo.
Yeah, I'll take it. I was at Nike for about 8 years, hence why I was in Portland, Oregon, for quite a bit of time. I led digital innovation there, so a lot of the esports gaming space, podcasts, 2K, just new mediums that the brand wasn't used to. I would go out and explore and, you know, make the case for why we should bring them internal and build something ourselves. And the pandemic hit. And I think, you know, at that point, I'd spent a lot of time, you know, it was a new place at Nike, new faces. And I thought, you know, this would be the time if I'm going to take the time to get out, you know, I could always probably come back and find a space at Nike. But, you know, I think that was an opportunity for me to go out and be more of an entrepreneur, do my own thing. And luckily I kept in contact with a couple of my friends that I worked with at Nike, Jerron Smith, who was, Steph Curry's basketball business manager, for quite a while. And then another friend of ours, Daniel George. And, we just pretty much got together, tried to figure out what was next for our career and, started a company called AIR, H-E-I-R, which stands for How Excellence is Remembered. And it's been a fun journey. We raised the largest seed round in Thrive Capital's history, $10 million. So it was great. It was a great start. It's still early. But yeah, it's a lot of building, totally different world than what I was used to in corporate.
Explain kind of what it is.
So the AIR app is basically a new way for fans to connect with their favorite athletes and vice versa. We do that by basically on-chain, blockchain, and off-chain transactions. And basically, you know, we help athletes sell their NFTs, you know, give exclusive content to their fans, access to memorabilia, game tickets, stuff like that. So it's a capped community. Every athlete's community is capped. And basically the only way you can come in that community is if you sell the NFT, that's basically your ticket. So it's like similar to a personal seat license for a community of collectors.
Cool. Jeff, how early to the space are you guys in that? I feel like for people like Goodman and I, we would be just hearing about NFTs in the last year, but I'm sure that there's been probably work being put in. Are you guys late to that space, or are you guys kind of in the middle, or where is the NFT world?
Probably in the middle. So we did our first seed round in spring of 2021, and that's like that was at the peak you know, time where everybody was talking about NFTs, and there's just a lot of excitement around it. Obviously, you know, I think it's a very, very long-term prospect when it comes to, I mean, looking at the gamut of things you can invest in. You know, it's definitely a long-term project, which, you know, I think for us, we get a chance to utilize our marketing skills a little bit more, things that we did at Nike, you know, combine tech and sport in a new way. So that's kind of what we focus on. And yeah, there are other players in the space that are still ramping up, but that's the beauty of Web3 is that everybody's kind of starting from the ground up, and it's a wide open market right now.
Are you guys mostly working with pro athletes, or do you see NIL as an opportunity to maybe get into that space for college players?
Absolutely. So we have our first athlete was Lonzo Ball. We started with NBA guys, We did Anthony Edwards this past summer. And then, yeah, we've looked at some of the NIL guys. Amari Bailey, somebody that we've had great conversations with and potentially coming on board. And we actually just did a whole two-on-two, first ever two-on-two basketball tournament for some of the high school guys that have been, you know, doing well and kind of rising seniors, if you will. And so that was a lot of fun. Like, I think just doing those kind of fun events and experiences around NIL and just supporting their journey in any way possible is you know, our bread and butter. And how can we also teach them about the space and what we've been building?
Can we get a Hummel NIL? Can we do a Hummel NIL? Can I be,
part
of that moron? I don't play college basketball anymore. I can't get NIL.
We should definitely do an NFT for the podcast, for sure.
We can get a knee brace out here or something. So, Jeff, I want to ask you, going back to high school and where you're working on your game, trying to be the best player you can, and your dad is one of the best players and really one of the most famous people on the planet. You know, what was it like to play the same sport as Michael Jordan when you're trying to be Jeffrey Jordan?
Yeah. Right. It was definitely, I think, early on when I started to take basketball a little bit more seriously, like 10 to 13 years old, you know, the pressure was palpable. Like, you know, people are coming, you have larger than normal crowds at, you know, a seventh grade basketball game or sixth grade basketball game. And he tried to make as many as he possibly could. And that was, you know, that was something that was unique. And I think, you know, I would go see other friends play. I would go see other schools play. And I noticed maybe this was a little different, right? My situation may have been a little bit different. But as time went on, like, I think the game and the instincts that you have as a basketball player just kind of have to take over, right? You have to throw caution to the wind. You can't think about who's in the stands or who's watching, because that'll affect your play. So over time, it just continued to get a little easier year after year to deal with and block it out, for sure.
What was the hardest part of it? Like, what was the hardest part, you know?
I think just the competition, like, you were getting everybody's best game, right? You knew they were coming.
They wanted to beat you.
To beat me, yeah. Right? I probably never met them, probably don't even know me. I've never heard of them. And you're going to get their best game. And it was like that every single time we played. And so I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, I think that adds something. And obviously tons of trash talk, tons of energy in any environment helps me. So it was a lot of just targeting, right? Like, how do I go after him and kind of make my name known against the Jordan?
So when I watch LeBron now with Bronny, I don't know if you see this at all, but LeBron is very active. Is like, if he's not coaching, he's still on the sidelines. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, the first time I saw Bronny was in Vegas, and LeBron knew every kid's name on the team. The kid would come off the court and he would give him like maybe a little bit of advice. I was super impressed, to be honest. I was like, man, he's involved. I didn't think he'd be. Your dad was different with this, wasn't he? Didn't he just kind of sit in the stands and just.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He was just kind of, you know, I think he harped on, you know, having fun with the game first. He said, you know, basically, if you don't have that love of the game, or you don't have enough time to play it and figure out how much fun it is to you, you're not going to want to work at it later on. And so that worked for us. You know, I felt like I was getting better because I had that passion, not necessarily instilled, but I grew to love it, right? And I grew to kind of take it and make it my own. And that's important. But I also think it's really cool to see LeBron and his son's dynamic and the team, and, you know, how he's kind of hyping them up, and their relationship is really, really cool to watch. Yeah, we were just different. And
but that's your dad, you know, too, right? That's your dad now.
Oh yeah.
With the NBA team. Like, he's not an owner who's like Mark Cuban. He's just kind of chill on it. He doesn't want to be in the limelight.
Exactly. And I think that's something, when Last Dance came out, I actually mentioned that. you know, he can really turn it on and turn it off when he wants to. I think the problem is when he turns it on, you know, it's hard, a little harder to get it to turn off, right? So he's very cautious about, you know, where he's going to be competitive and where he's going to just be like, you know what, you know, let, you got to let the people do, let the team do what they're supposed to do. And I've actually learned a ton just from watching that, you know, how he interacts with the organization, delegation, you know, really just being in that position of leadership and how to deal with people, for sure.
We're dropping our merch.
We got to start calling Underwood Daddy Brad.
But I'm a big pod guy.
Breaking news, the Field of 68 has an online store, and it's your one-stop shop for the latest and greatest merch in college basketball and college football. You can find shirts to support your favorite team, make fun of your rival team, or boast Field of 68 catchphrases like Daddy Brad, Cussin' and Discussin', and the Star Heels. Go to www.fieldof68.shop today and enter promo code TOUCHDOWN for 20% off at checkout.
Jeff, did you feel an internal pressure to play basketball? Like, or were you steered toward it, or was it something that you from a young age really knew you wanted to do?
It was something I think I knew I really wanted to do. You know, I think you could have told me that I would be a billionaire, you know, predict the future. I would be a billionaire and do all these things, be an entrepreneur, and I probably still would have, you know, ran my head against the basketball wall. So, you know, it was something that I, you know, we just had a passion for, myself, my brother. And, you know, we played a lot of sports, but, you know, football is probably my best. Basketball probably was second, but it was my first love. So I stuck with it.
Going back to what Jeff just kind of talked about with your dad coaching, do you remember a time where your dad maybe got after you after a game, or, you know, some of that competitive fire maybe did come out?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we would have to almost egg it out of him. You have to egg him on to get it. I think definitely in high school, probably about my sophomore, junior year, he just wanted me to really know when to shoot and when to pass, right? I think I was just getting to that level where you have people that can score, you know, just as good as you do. You have people that are able to do the things that you can. How do you know when to pick and choose your spots? And so that would be mainly, I remember a couple games in high school, he was just railing me like, why didn't you take this shot? Why didn't you take that shot? But it'd be quick. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it was like a couple minutes after the game, and it would just stop like that. But we just watched, we watched so much basketball. Like, we would just sit and watch game after game after game after game. And that's how I kind of began to take my advice or take my learnings from him, is just through the IQ.
It's funny you say that, because I had the same conversation with my dad about when to shoot, when to pass after a game where I took two shots in a high school game. And it wasn't like I should shoot all the time, but it was about being aggressive and picking your spots. And I just think it's funny because your dad's coming from a place of six NBA championships. Yeah. And my dad's coming from he played number one singles at the University of Illinois for the tennis team. So, you know, it's the same conversation, but it's really not. But it is interesting that we were having the same conversation probably around the same time.
Absolutely. And dads know, like, you know, they can see it when you're being a little bit more tentative, right? They totally. They have an innate sense of where your aggression is and can see that from a distance. And so, definitely took all that to heart, and you know, it wasn't the last time we probably had that conversation, but you know, junior senior year, I started just letting it fly, having more fun, not thinking about when to do this or when to do that for sure.
So Rob and I went through the questions last night a little bit, and he was like, all right, ask him when the first time you ever beat your dad in one-on-one. I'm like, what do you mean when he beat him? I said, why don't we ask him when the most points he ever scored?
Every son has beat their dad if they were good at something.
It's Michael Jordan. Wait, you beat your dad in one-on-one?
Oh, yeah. Really? It wasn't just him. So it was myself, my brother, my dad, and Carmelo Anthony playing, just kind of cutthroat. And And yeah, I just, there were some heat, obviously some trash talk. My brother and my dad were going at it a little bit. Me and Mello were going at it a little bit. And somehow, some way, I snuck out the win in a cutthroat one-on-one. So
how much trash did you talk?
I just walked out. To be honest, I didn't. There was already so much trash talk going. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna stay out of it. I'm gonna take my W and slide out to the left for sure.
Jeff, we've talked about LeBron and we've mentioned him and his kids, Bronny and Bryce, are starting to maybe go through some things that you have experienced. And you certainly had the hype building as well. I remember our senior high school watching the game on ESPN where you guys played against North Central, against Eric Gordon, who at the time, like, people think of Eric Gordon now as a three-point shooter and a good NBA role player, but Eric Gordon was a freight train and a freak of nature athletically. I mean, unbelievable. So you're on national television, and the game is really billed as you and Marcus against Eric Gordon. So you felt that pressure. You know, what kind of are these kids going through as they're dealing with much of the same thing that you were?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely a lot of similarities. You know, definitely dealing with people off the court, having opinions, commenting on this or that. You know, a lot of people that, you know, probably haven't even watched them play, just, you know, putting some expectations on them in one way or another. That's par for the course when you obviously had a father that's had some success in the sport. And then there's a lot that they are going through that I can't even imagine, right? Like, there's tons that have changed from Instagram to, you know, Twitter, and just the rise of social platforms and NIL being what it is now. So there are a lot of similarities, but a lot has changed as well, I would say. And they're probably going through some unique changes as well.
I mean, can you imagine just like what Bronny goes to prom and people are critical of his prom? I mean, like, as a 16-year-old kid, it's like, I just want to play basketball and be normal. And that is absolutely hard to fathom.
I can't
even. Some of that. I mean, Jeff, you went through some of that. The difference is now the world sees it through social media.
Exactly. I think that's it's not a small difference, just because it's a lot more visible, right? You could cover up some of those mistakes without, if you have 100,000 followers versus a million, 1.5, right? And so that, it makes a difference, but I think at the same time, like I said, you know, you have to be able to and willing to shut that out, in order to progress as a player. And I think they've done a great job of that so far. And obviously that's all praise to their parents.
Have you followed Bronny and Bryce a decent amount, Joe, just from maybe taking interest as it's a similar deal?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, I would love to bring them on our platform, and potentially sign and work with them for sure. So I'm sure they have a lot of suitors, but definitely I've been keeping tabs on them since their early days. It's exciting. It's exciting to see kind of how they progress and how they handle it, you know, with all the social pressures that are going on. But it's pretty cool to watch for sure.
Like I said, I've seen him multiple times. I just saw him in July again. He is so impressed. Bronny, so impressive in his composure. And you had the same thing. I mean, you were pretty even keeled, composed. Nothing rattled you. I feel like, you know, it's got to be the case because, again, you've grown up with it, right? You've grown up with it.
Yeah.
Like, the people, the haters, I just don't understand it. I don't get it. It's like,
yeah,
like, you didn't ask for this. It's not like you just want to play ball. He just wants to play ball.
Absolutely. It's easy to criticize when you haven't had that experience, right? If you haven't been in on the court, in the trenches with these guys, you know, seeing how they handle adversity, then, you know, everybody's going to have their opinion one way or another. But that's why I'm thankful. I got the chance to play with guys like Robbie and, you know, our class throughout that time, because, you know, that's where I feel like, you know, I grew up a lot. I learned a lot through playing with those guys, being with those guys. And, you know, hopefully it happens for them as well. But you're always going to have the haters. You're always going to have people outside of that world that don't understand or don't have to experience what you experience on a daily basis.
Give me the one piece of advice you would give Bronny. If you could talk to him, not about your platform, about being Bronny, going through kind of what you went through.
So, yeah, Bronny, yeah. Sign with my platform. It
will be- Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, just keep doing what he's been doing. You know, I think he's got a laser focus. I would say just, you know, continue to have fun and you know, just be mindful of where your level is at, where your stress is at, where your game's at, where you're, you know, if you're having enough fun, you know, just being more aware and being mindful of where you are in that moment. And continue to progress, keep doing what he's doing for sure.
So staying on the topic of LeBron, Jeff and I were laughing about this last night. Every person that follows basketball in this country has the debate of who is the greatest player of all time, LeBron, James, or your dad.
Yeah.
Do you have an opinion on it? Because everybody else does. Everybody else feels a certain way about it. So I guess you're biased, I suppose. You have to be. But do you get these arguments?
I can't wait till he says, Rob, LeBron James is the greatest player ever.
No, there's zero chance.
That's never going
to
happen.
Do you get these arguments too? I assume you have to.
Absolutely. I get them all the time. And yeah, I'm obviously biased. I'm biased towards my pops. But, you know, I think it's hard. And this is something my dad said multiple times. It's hard to compare generation to generation of basketball players, just because, I mean, as you guys know, the sport changes, the game changes, the talent level is, you know, more or less changing or different every year. So, you know, it's tough to say, oh, well, this era is better than this era. But, you know, I think that's pretty much how I don't really give opinion. You know, I think people know where I stand on this issue, so I don't think about it too much.
You can't compete with 6-0 in the finals. That's all that we'll say about this, right?
Exactly.
You mentioned The Last Dance earlier. You know, it like captivated the country during the pandemic, right? It was like the timing of that coming out could not have been better, because everybody was watching it and everybody had an opinion on it. Give me your biggest takeaway of it. Give me your biggest takeaway of something that maybe even you were like, man, I didn't know that.
I think just the amount of just the interpersonal dynamics. There was something every year going on with that team. And when you have some success, or, you know, even before they had the success that they did, just seeing how they met these challenges, like the Pistons, you know, like maybe some inner squabbles, like, you know, some of the trash talk and maybe some bad practices. You know, I think there was just a lot of overcoming challenges, which is what I got out of it. And it took every single one of those guys on each of those teams to do that. So, it was really interesting to see. And I think for my dad personally, it was, I got to see, I think I had a better understanding of how he was a leader, or how he saw himself as a leader. And obviously how the team, you know, how the team saw him as a leader. So definitely it was super informative. I've only watched it once. I got to go back and watch it a couple more times.
I do too. I want to watch it again.
I've been waiting and saving it for the right time and, you know, right space and, you know, go back into it. But I think it was perfect. Perfect showing, perfect movie, and perfect time for sure.
Did your dad like it? Did your dad like? Have you talked to him about it after he watched it?
I had talked to him a little bit before we released it. I had seen snippets of it, and I know he was a little nervous about it being seen by the public. And you know, my feedback was, I think people are gonna love it. You know, I think people are gonna love to see that fire and how you took it, you know, how you took leadership, a leadership position, and what that meant, right? That wasn't the same in the 80s as it was in the 90s in terms of him leading the team. And just seeing the rest of the team, like seeing how they all interacted, you know, have utmost respect for Phil. I think handling all these different personalities couldn't have been easy, but it was awesome. It was awesome to see, for sure.
So for the 98 season, you would have been 9. You're 89, correct?
88, yep.
88, so you'd have been 9 or 10.
Yeah.
What's the coolest moment that you remember from maybe going with the 90s Bulls? I'm sure by the end of it, you remember stuff. I mean, some of the stuff you never know because you've seen it maybe in replays and, you know, you think you remember, but I guess if you can pick a moment from that kind of run with the Bulls, is there something that sticks out story-wise for you?
I think I probably remember all the way back to like the baseball days, like Birmingham and that stuff. You know, snippets here and there before that, but what really stuck out was the trip to France after the 72. I think it was after the 72 or maybe right before 72 and 10 season.
That was the McDonald's classic deal in Paris.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. I remember my dad actually went a year. He went a year before that. I think he had some Nike brand stuff. And then I ended up, you know, I was excited to go with him on this trip and got to ride on the team plane. My sister, my brother, my mom all took the Concorde over and we were supposed to switch on the way back. And I was like, nah, I'm going to stick with the team there and back. But that was a really cool tournament to watch and just see like a whole nother culture, like how they react to him. It was amazing to see.
So looking at like issues now, all these athletes are very outspoken. Your dad never has been. He never really has been. He's kind of stayed in his lane to himself a little bit. And I think people like me, again, you know, having so much respect for him, and he had so much juice, so much power. Have you talked to him about that? Of like, hey, Dad, you could impact so much with your thoughts, with your words, with you know, what you've experienced. Have you talked to him about that? And has he told you why he doesn't do it more?
We've definitely, you know, my siblings and I have definitely talked to him about it. And, you know, I think he's done a lot. He does a lot through, you know, giving back to the community, you know, building new structures. I think that's the way he prefers to show his support or show where he stands, as opposed to coming out and saying words, right, or speaking on it. I definitely think he could be, you know, his voice is obviously super powerful and strong, and, you know, it could definitely sway, you know, public opinion this way or that way. But I think that's just not what he wants to be a part of, right? He'd rather just build and support the causes that he loves and do his talking that way. I mean, personally, I'm still trying to figure out when is the right time to speak and when is the right time to kind of be quiet, right? Just because of that example.
Well, you must feel that way of like anything you say. And have you always felt that way? Like growing up, anything you say, you've got to be careful about because it could be taken the wrong way. Or listen, it might be taken the right way, but your dad might even be like, hey, why did you say this? Right. This impacts me as well.
Right. Definitely. I think it's definitely something that's gotten harder as the years go on because of the visibility that social media provides. But it's always been there, right? That's something our parents were telling us, you know, you're going to be treated differently. You have to watch the things you do, the things you say. And then obviously the more exposure we got to, you know, to the rest of the world and kind of grew our own followings a bit, that's only became more and more important, you know, as we've seen over the past couple of years and decades. So, you know, you could definitely, I think it's powerful. I think everybody, I'm sure you guys deal with it too. Sometimes it's like, yeah, okay, well, thinking about something that I said or maybe getting some comments or feedback on some things you said. But, you know, I think it's always great to state your opinion and where you stand on things. And, you know,
but it's harder now. No, you're right.
It's definitely harder. Definitely harder.
Yeah, I just feel like, again, in social media, this world, it's harder because whatever you say can be amplified and really taken out of context because you're dealing with like Twitter, however many characters, what is it, 280 now? Whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Like, I'll give you a great example. A few years ago, Kyrie was playing in Boston and he stomped on the Celtics logo at the end of the game. And then he walked off the court and somebody threw a bottle at him. And I basically put out a tweet saying, hey, both of them need to grow up, both the guy who threw the bottle and Kyrie. I wasn't equating that. I wasn't saying it was the same level, but I could only fit that in 280 characters. people killed me for.
Right.
They're like, how are you saying they're the same? I'm like, no, I'm not saying they're the same, but I can't fit it in the one tweet. I got to fit it into two tweets.
Right, right. You can't put, you know, a whole conversation with, in context and in a couple of tweets. And, you know, my brothers have more experience with it because he definitely, he has a filter now, but he didn't always have one.
Yeah, no, he did not. He did not.
And so, you know, I think I had the benefit, you know, which is rare. I had the benefit of watching how he interacted on social media, where, you know, usually I'm leading the charge and going through things first. But yeah, he jumped out there and you got to see kind of that lash, that backlash. But it's just tough. It's hard. You know, I think it's one of the great things about our country, obviously free speech. And then on the other side of that, you know, there's some sensitive topics out there and some people that get offended really, really, by really, you know, mean and maybe not so mean stuff. So, it's interesting. I think, you know, I've only gotten more into kind of seeing comments and tweets like literally my last couple of years. But prior to that, it was something I never really paid attention to because there was that fear of you know, being criticized or ridiculed for what I say.
Jeff, does it surprise you how people still react to your dad just because he hasn't played in, I mean, what did he retire from Washington in 2002?
2002, yeah.
But then you does. See him at, like, if he's at the national championship game, the cameras show him constantly for North Carolina when they were there, or even the top 75 thing. You know, that's a group of elite alpha males, but there was clearly one alpha male that is above all of the rest, you know? And it's like the way people react to your dad, to me, is really incredible when he has not played in almost 25 years.
Right. No, definitely. The 75th anniversary was, I think, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it. It's probably the biggest moment that I really seen and that I realized, you know, the impact that is still there, especially amongst peers, right? And I think in some respect you expect that the most from your peers, but to see it and, you know, kind of just to see him embrace it as well, I get goosebumps now thinking about it. It's pretty cool to see and pretty cool to watch. So yeah, I'm a little surprised, but not really when you see the inner basketball community still kind of praising and look towards his accolades for sure.
Give me Jeff the one, because he had people fear him. Like, people were intimidated, they were scared of him. Give me the best story of when you were scared as shit of your dad.
Oh man. There's only been maybe there's probably been a handful of times. I think the biggest one, I was a kid. He was out of town on a work trip, and I was just getting I was a sophomore, actually, not a kid. I was getting my learner's permit, my driver's permit. And I don't know what popped into my head, but one day I took out his SLR McLaren. And it was just, I don't know what I was thinking. I just, you know, maybe I'll take it around the block or go around the circle, come back in the gate. And when I brought it back in, I parked it the wrong way. And so when he got home, he was like, he knew, I guess somebody might have told him, or he saw it on camera. And I was terrified. We had to have a long, long talk. And yeah, it was not one of my best moments. Not one of the best moments.
You didn't ding it up, did you? There was no like dings on this thing, was there?
Yeah, no. It was just parked the wrong way.
Such a rookie move.
Yeah, it was such a rookie move. I don't know how to this day how I let that slip, but he was pretty pissed off, and good reason. I mean, that car was way faster than I could handle at that age. So, so I'm just glad I didn't scrape it up.
Hey, before we finish here, I wanted to ask you, I'm like every other basketball player in the world that when they stop playing, they start to love golf for some reason. First of all, have you started playing? And if you have, how insane is Grove 23, your dad's course, that he basically was just like, I'm sick of playing slow, so I'm just going to build my own course, which most of us have to complain of. Well, we'll just keep playing slow, but
exactly. It's awesome, man. Yeah, I've definitely been playing, obviously, being out in Florida, you know, golf capital of the world, it feels like. Been playing a ton and getting out to Grove as much as possible. It's been fun. That's usually where we connect and get to hang out and see each other. And, you know, obviously I was on the other side of the country for about 8 years. So now it's a lot of catch up and, you know, having fun, and golf is a great way to do it. I don't know what it is about, you know, yeah, basketball players just trying to
everybody get out there does it. It's like the natural everybody. Progression of when your body breaks down enough to not be able to play basketball, everybody starts playing golf. I don't know why.
Yeah. Courtney Lee is another friend of mine out here. We actually play together pretty often. Guys love playing, you know.
Hummel says he's good. He says he's really good right now.
I've been grinding, Jeff. I've been working on my game.
I mean, all really, he does is
me
play
too.
Golf.
I'm not going to ask you your handicap because mine isn't too good right now, but we should definitely play.
No, let's do it. Let's do it. Next time I'm in Florida, I'll definitely look you up.
Hummel's got plenty of days off in the he's got a long off season.
Hey, you know what? The summers are awesome. The time to relax after you call these games in the winter time, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, we'll hit Grove. Let me know.
Listen, we really appreciate you coming on. It's been way
thanks,
too long.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I know for you guys, it was very cool to kind of reconnect this way. And at some point, we'll get your off the air your best Hummel story from the Nike camp. I'm sure he got in trouble, broke curfew, did something wrong.
You know, that IUPUI campus, it's a wild place. So.
It is. It's a wild spot.
Thanks, awesome, man.
Thank you guys so much.
Listen, appreciate it. Good luck with everything in the future and continued success.
Anytime, guys. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.